If this has happened once in the last 7 years, I don't remember it. Okay? I'm sure there's somebody out there with a much greater memory than I have, and maybe you do, and you'll remind me later. Don't you hate it when your sermon is written, you're closing out a summer series about the church, and at 10:30 on Saturday night, you feel the Spirit prompting you to go in a different direction? Everybody loves that, right? I have a great sermon written right now that either will never get preached, or I'll have to preach it at a later date and not tell you, you know, like, hey, that was the one from a long time ago. But this morning, I'm going to do something I don't typically do. I'm going to go a different direction. I'm going to sit on a stool at a table, and I want to tell you a story, okay? Because this happened at 10:30 at night, I'm going to look at my notes quite a bit to be sure I'm where I need to be. There's a Christian rapper slash spoken word artist that over the years has been spiritual food for me. His name is Propaganda. It's not his real name, it's his stage name. But this dude is a spoken word artist. He also raps. And I have found great healing through his works over the last 2 years. Last 2 years have been the most difficult 2 years of my life following the death of my father. And I would go on walks and I would just consume this guy's album entitled Crimson Cord. He builds this incredible image around this idea that we all have what he calls a crimson cord at work in our lives. And what that crimson cord is it's all the strands of experiences and people and conversations and scars that all are interwoven together through some mystery that we cannot understand, but God does it to create what he calls our crimson cord. And he actually says in one of the songs, he says, "Wear your scars out loud." That's the fingerprints of the Lord. The crimson cord, it's a timeline, right? Your crimson cord. That's the first song on the album. By the time you get to the end of the album, he has this song unlike anything I've ever heard before, where he goes through a list of names and he calls people by name in his life, and he talks about what those people did for him. And it ranges everywhere from a teacher who suggested he take up writing poetry to the person who first put a spray can in his hand to a person who kicked his tooth out of his mouth. I mean, it's all across the board about how people have been at work in his life. And again, he gets to the end of this song and he talks about this scarlet thread, this crimson cord. Now, I don't pretend to understand that I can understand the reality that goes into the idea of my own crimson cord, much less somebody else's. But I want to tell you a story this morning that's going to lead us to the baptismal font over here, and we're going to celebrate baptism this morning. 29 years ago this past week, I became a Christ follower. A young pastor by the name of Dwight Gunner at a youth concert in Winsboro, South Carolina, gave an altar call after the sermon. And I got up as a not even a teenager yet, 12 years old. I got up and I came down to the altar and I asked Jesus Christ to come into my life for the first time. Forgive me for my sins, come into my life and lead and guide me. 5 years later, 1994, I accepted God's call in my life to preach. I was at a teen camp. One of the reasons I believe we should be getting our teens and our kids to camp is because I think we open up space in those settings for God to be able to move in dramatic ways and change trajectory of lives. And that happened for me in 94. Again, a guy by the name of Pastor Monk that your father knew. Jim Cummins knew this man. I've never even seen this guy since the time that he gave this invitation. He said at this camp, he said, "Somebody here today may be sensing a call of God's a call in your life to preach." And I sat up and I said, "Yeah, that's what I believe God's calling me to do." And I came down to the altar and I was surrounded by some old guys, some old pastors from the district who were at teen camp being chaperones that week. They came down and they said, "Dwayne, what's going on?" I said, "I feel like God's calling me to preach." And they said, "You know what? We could see that. We affirm that in you." And I was like, "Okay, I don't know what this means. I don't even know what this looks like." And went down. I got on a pay phone. Remember that? "You have a collect call coming from Dwayne, right? Will you accept these charges?" On this particular night, my parents actually accepted the collect call. I stood in the cafeteria of the South Carolina District Campground, and I told my parents, I think God is calling me to preach. That was in 1994. Well, also in 1994, a gentleman by the name of Larry Leonard was pastoring this church. Except it wasn't this church in this location. It was called Central Church of the Nazarene, and it was downtown Orlando. Now, since then, it's made a move here to Curry Ford and 417, and we call it Center Point. But a gentleman by the name of Larry Leonard was pastoring this church the year that I accepted the call to preach. Well, I did what a lot of folks in the Nazarene system do. Jadriel's about to do it on Saturday. I graduated high school, and I went to Trevecca Nazarene University to pursue this call to ministry that God had given me that I didn't fully understand. From Nashville, Tennessee, I went to Kansas City, Missouri. I attended Nazarene Theological Seminary, and while I was in seminary, I got to youth pastor two different churches in Kansas City, one a Presbyterian church, Second Presbyterian. Some of you have heard this story. Second Presbyterian produced my wife for me. I saw this woman in the youth center on a Sunday night. I looked over and I said, hey, there's a visiting teenager here tonight. She wasn't a teenager at all. She was in college, right? And I met this girl and she became my wife. And from there, we got married and we got back from our honeymoon on a Saturday night. And the next Sunday morning, we started a brand new assignment at Kansas City First Church of the Nazarene as a youth pastor. I had a brand new wife, about to start a brand new assignment, and there we were. We were in Kansas City for about 4 years, and about 3.5 years into it, we sensed that God was preparing us to move on, and we didn't know what that meant. We didn't know what that looked like. We didn't know where that meant. But one night, we found ourselves at a picnic, a zone church picnic. Now, the zones had 12 to 15 churches in them, and pastors, people that you had never met, pastors and spouses and kids would come in, and we'd have a picnic and hamburgers and hot dogs and all that and just play. And one night, we were at a zone picnic, and we had sensed that God was saying to us, it's time to go, but we didn't see any open doors. We met this family from the Harrisonville church, and they were called the E-Steps. Steve E-Step was the dad, and Michelle, and three kids. We called them the Killer Bees, Blake, Brooke, and Brandon. At the time, Blake was in the sixth grade. I had already been throwing football with this kid, but we hadn't actually talked, because what you do is when you're at a park, you see a kid with a football, you go, hey, buddy, right here. So we started throwing football. So we threw football for a while. We got nice, hot, and sweaty. And sure enough, we said, hey, let's take a break and grab a drink. So we went under the shelter. We grabbed a drink, and I sat down. This little kid, sixth grade, I kid you not, he came over all just sweaty, nasty looking. And he comes over, and he plops down right beside me. He didn't even tell me his name. He didn't even ask me his name. He plopped down right beside me, and he looked at me. He said, what's your favorite worship song? That little question blew me away. A sixth grader asking me what my favorite worship song is. This has nothing to do with the story, and this is free. If you're a kid, if you're a teen, one of the best things you could do right now is learn to cultivate the ability to talk to adults. Okay? Kids, teens, that's free. Learn to talk to adults about life, relationships, feelings, all that kind of stuff. All right? So this kid plops down and goes, what's your favorite worship song? And I don't even remember what I said, but I remember this kid left an impression on me. I was like, man, this is one cool little dude. Like, where's he from? He's got some good stock in him. A few weeks later, I got a phone call from his dad. His dad was the pastor of the Harrisonville Church, Steve Estep. And Steve called and he said, Dwayne, can we meet for lunch? And I said, I'd love to meet you for lunch. I'd never had a conversation with this guy outside of, hi, how are you, who are you, that kind of thing. So sure enough, we find ourselves at the IHOP. We're sitting at IHOP, and he looks across the table at me and says, tell me a little bit about your youth ministry and your philosophy of ministry. And I began to talk a little bit, and he listened. And after a little while, he said, okay, he says, here's the deal. He says, I have a call from Clarksville Grace Church in Clarksville, Tennessee. He said, is there any chance that you would pray about going to Clarksville with me and being my associate pastor? And I said, well, you know, from what I've heard and the conversation we had, I said, yeah, I think I would absolutely pray about it. 3 months later, Marley and I found ourselves standing in the parsonage of the Clarksville Grace Church on a visit to go and interview. And with every amount of peace I could understand at the time for how God might affirm a call, I stood in the bedroom of that parsonage looking out on the woods and the trees and the wind blowing in the trees, and I knew then that God was calling us to go to Clarksville, Tennessee. Not long after that, we pulled into Clarksville, and we began a three-year youth ministry right there in Clarksville. 1 year into this assignment, I was sitting at the Tennessee District Assembly at Trevecca Community Church on Trevecca's campus, same school I had graduated from. And I was sitting there, and I see this guy come in, and for all practical purposes, he looked like a used car salesman, right? This dude was playing the crowd like a politician. Like, I'm confident on this day he was kissing babies, right? But he walks in, kind of a smug look. He's got his little leather briefcase, you know, wrapped around him. He's doing this whole thing that he does, you know, winking and pointing and all this kind of stuff. And I look, and in my mind, I'm like, who is this guy, right? And like, where's the sales pitch? When's it going to come in? Well, in fact, this guy was the new youth pastor at Clarksville First Church. So I was at Clarksville Grace as the youth pastor. He was the brand new youth pastor at Clarksville First Church of the Nazarene. So without having met this guy, nobody even asked my opinion, we're now youth pastoring in the same town. Well, very true to his form, he sent me a text during the assembly. So we've never met. Come to find out, he knew my sister. My mom had met him. My mom had met his wife. And along the way, this guy wanted to meet me. So he sent me a text saying that he wanted to meet. And the truth is we became good friends very quickly in our road to ministry. Not long after that, we were bringing our youth ministries together. Like, we had done away with this idea that that's your youth ministry over there, and this is my youth ministry over here, and you do your thing, and I'll do mine. We really tried to start approaching youth ministry like, what does it look like to do youth ministry in a city together? So we started doing fundraising together and back-to-school bashes together and retreats together. And the next thing you know, we find ourselves taking on more responsibility within the district. And so in the summer of 2011, I was the camp director for both our middle school and our high school camps. And right there along the way, because it takes about a year to plan a camp, I had my good friend and my partner in ministry, Nick Peoples, with me right there walking this journey with me. On this particular year, 2011, we had two very incredible but very exhausting weeks of camp. We saw great things happen. God moved in the hearts and lives of students and adults, and we had fun along the way. Now, on the last day of camp, camp was over. The pastor had preached the last message. People were starting to scatter. Chairs were starting to be stacked up. People were starting to sweep floors. And a gentleman by the name of Larry Leonard, who pastored this church back in the mid-90s, pulled me aside and he said, "Hey, Dwayne," he said, "I want you to know that I've put your name in down at Orlando Center Point Church." He said, "They've been looking for a pastor." He said, I think you would be a great fit for that church, and I just want you to know to start praying about that opportunity." I said, "Well, Dr. Leonard, thanks so much for your vote of confidence in me. I will pray about this." I left that conversation with Dr. Leonard, and I made my way through the chairs, the stacked chairs, and I found Nick Peoples. Nick was mad at the time because some of his teens had played a prank on him. They had stolen his phone, right? And if there's anybody in life you want to play a prank on, it's Nick Peoples. He was mad, guys. I mean, he was truly upset. We had heard it for like 2 or 3 days. Like, my family's trying to get in touch with me, and I don't have my phone, and I don't know if anything's wrong, blah, blah, blah. It's like, we don't have cell service at the campground anyway. Like, it's all good, you know? He's banging on doors trying to find this thing. Well, some of his teens had hijacked his phone. So I go over to him. Last day of camp. He's mad. And I go over to him, and I say, "Hey, man," I said, "how you doing?" He goes, "I'm mad, man." He's like, "Somebody's got my phone." And I said, "Well, here's the thing. You got to get over it because I want to talk to you for a second." He's like, "All right, what?" I said, "I just talked to Dr. Leonard. Said he put my name down in at Orlando Center Point down in Orlando, Florida. And I said, if this thing were to happen and this door opened, would you go with me? He said, oh, man, yeah. He said, we definitely pray about it, and we try to figure out what that looks like. You see, by this point, we had become friends. Our wives had become friends. Addie had already pushed Andy in the pool, even though Andy was only like 2 years old. Like, these things were already starting to unfold for us. About June, July, August, about 3 months later, I stood in the pulpit here for the first time, September 18th, 2011. I became your pastor. I don't remember if it was the first board meeting or the second board meeting, but we sat back here in what is now the youth room, and I presented a name to your church board. I said, hey, I feel like we need to make a call to Nick and Shelley Peoples about coming to be our associate pastor. Jim Getz, I don't know if he remembers this. He goes, Pastor Dwayne, I thought you were a slow and deliberate decision maker. And I said, I am. I said, but I've been praying about this particular decision for a pretty long time. Well, sure enough, about 3 months after that, Nick and Shelley and Addie and Gracie, they pulled into this parking lot. I remember a little Addie jumping out of their car out here under the canopy and running to embrace Andy. And as she did, Addie goes, best day ever! So the people's family, they were right here. They were about to make their home in Orlando. And very specifically, they were going to make their home in Waterford. So sure enough, they found a rental in the Emerald View subdivision in Waterford Lakes. They moved into this home, and as Nick and Shelley do, because Nick and Shelley are these people, they started connecting with their neighbors. You can't be around Nick and Shelley and not start to get connected, because they're going to reach out to you even if you don't want it, right? I mean, they're going to love people. And sure enough, that's what they started doing right there in their neighborhood in Waterford. Over a period of time, they started to develop a really strong relationship with a single mom just a couple houses down who had recently adopted three kids. Single mom adopting three children. And they started to... they started to love on these kids to the point that lines like neighbor and family started to get blurred. It wouldn't take very long before Nick and Shelley would begin to enfold this family into the life of Centerpoint Church. I don't understand it, but I believe propaganda when he talks about a crimson cord, a timeline, the evidence that proves to us God's existence, joy we misplace, beautiful mistakes, the scarlet thread, the crimson cord. These are very big, very vague details. There's not a lot of intricacy to the details I'm giving you today. But I can tell you that 25 years ago, Larry Leonard pastored this church. 10 years ago, God called me to Clarksville, Tennessee. 7 years ago, Larry Leonard put my name in a pot in this church, and I knew immediately I wanted Nick Peoples to be right there by my side. 6 years ago, Nick and Shelley moved into a Waterford neighborhood right here in East Orlando. 2 years ago, Pastors Javier and Fabiana came on staff with us. And all along the way, God has been orchestrating His grace and His love through a plan that we could never imagine in the hearts and lives of His people. And today, two of the teenagers from that family are going to be baptized. And as we talk about baptism, we understand that it is this public proclamation of faith in Jesus Christ, of hope in Jesus Christ. And these kids today are experiencing a healing work in their lives because of Christ. And today, friends, we get to celebrate what God has done, what God is doing and what God is going to do in the days ahead for them. I don't want to make this more convoluted than it is, but when this family came into this church, they met a Judge Don Myers, who was already a part of this congregation, who actually was a part of all the adoption proceedings. And the mom even said to me yesterday, "Pastor, to see all the ways that everything just comes back to center point, it's amazing. Miss Sharon, bless you. We love you. We love your kids. We love this family. And we celebrate the work of God." Friends, this is for me a very humbling strand of the unraveling of the story of the love and faithfulness of God. And center point, I wanted to say this to you today. Don't ever underestimate how God might use you and his movement in your life to bring about salvation and healing into the hearts and lives of others. And friends, today, Larry Leonard doesn't even know we're having this conversation. Today, Steve Estep does not even know we're having this conversation. Blake Estep does not even know we're having this conversation. I haven't even had a chance to tell my wife. God uses us in amazing ways. It's why we should be living our lives faithfully and prayerfully, so that even when we know it and even when we don't, he has the freedom to go and do and move as he sees fit. The scripture that comes to mind is simply this. In the Corinthians, Paul is writing to this young Corinthians church, and he's talking about leadership in the church. And here's what he says. He says, "There are these times in life where I may be able to come in and plant a seed in your hearts, and somebody like Apollos may be able to come in and water it behind me. But the truth is God brings all the growth." So friends, the parts that we play are very important. Even in the midst of a system that is going and running, we have a part to play. And God's able to use us and work through us all along the way. And over the next few minutes, we simply get to celebrate that goodness. Center point, thanks be to God. Amen.